Hi, everybody, and welcome to the FinOps Nexus podcast. I'm your host, John Meyer, and joining me today is Tyler Cyphers. Tyler, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, John, thanks to be here.
Okay, our topic today is finance's role in FinOps, and I have to really tell you that this is an interesting topic because I honestly think finance just pays the bill. Talk to me a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It kind of depends on how you define FinOps, right? Is it a culture? Is it a discipline? Or is it more structurally how it's organized within the business? And I think for me, right, like it's from a culture standpoint, it's in the name, FinOps, financial operations. It's a finance discipline at heart because fundamentally it's stewardship over dollars and resources to drive the ultimate business value. Now, if you're talking again, organizationally, how does that work? Yeah, finance is going to be geared more on the procurement, the forecasting side of those things. But again, it's a bit of a nuanced discussion.
Tyler, we're going to talk about forecasting, hopefully rate optimization, and specifically around discount. But here's my question for you is with finance, you're really talking about the financial aspects of the business, balancing the books. That's really kind of how I envision it. But now Within FinOps, it plays a crucial part, not only within three key areas, finance, business, and engineering. Does this require a new skill set to understand what the business and applications are doing and the engineers are deploying?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. I think, you know, ultimately, I think that finance in general and FP&A specifically has really shifted over the last several years to be more of a strategic center of the business, not just numbers, reports, financials, right? So I think in lots of areas, it's beneficial for folks to really have a deep understanding of the business. And for me personally, when sort of early on engaging more in the cloud finance, FinOps side of the business. Yeah, there's a lot that you need to then understand about how the product works from an engineering perspective, because then that might imply how costs grow respective to customers and things of that nature. So in order to certainly do it well, you definitely need that sort of collaborative aspect and definitely a business mindset. I don't think you can do it in just a silo.
Before, when you really think about it, and you actually just mentioned silos, as an engineer, there's a silos, finance and business. You guys all stay in your area. I stay in my area and we do our things. Yeah. Now what's really kind of thinking about is engineering needs to understand some aspects of the finance and how they're handling some of the cloud costs that's happening. And business needs to understand the finance, not only that, along with engineering and how Everything's kind of built and deployed, right?
Yep. Yeah. I think to your point, I think going back to sort of what is finance's role in a lot of this, right? Obviously, the sort of the first fundamental of sort of the FinOps, you know, cycle is that visibility. And so from a finance standpoint, right, it's how do we provide that visibility to the engineering team, to the business teams, so that they can ultimately be held accountable and know the results of their actions, right? Like it's impossible for them to really, you know, take ownership unless they can actually see tangibly and understand, I run this particular test, or like this is the expected outcome. And then therefore, how do I optimize it in the future? So,
well, let's talk about forecasting, because Forecasting in the cloud is very difficult to do, right? I mean, we've been trying to do it for years. There's tools out there that kind of get you close. There's actually integrated tools by all the hyperscalers that you can kind of forecast and look at. When we forecast, when you're talking about traditional data centers, how forecasting happens is that engineering says, I need, you know, these 10 things, right?
Yeah.
And then they go back to the business and the manager says, okay, all right, I need these 10 things. And they send it off to finance. I can only afford 6 of these 10. So pick the top 6 that you want.
Right.
And then you have those for the next 5 years. How are you able to forecast for cloud?
Yeah, I think cloud is obviously much more dynamic in that environment. And so depending on, you know, I try to simplify the process as much as possible and sort of break it down into the fundamental area. So if you think about, right, production expense as an example, right, this is the cost to run the customers themselves, right? So if you're thinking then tops down, okay, like what are our sales expectations in terms of how many new customers do we expect to add? What's the relative churn of those existing customers? And that can sort of get you close enough to a spend trajectory. Then obviously you can discount it for changes in rate optimization or other efficiencies that the engineering team may find on the usage side and so forth. But the production piece is, you know, I think relatively straightforward in that respect. Now, certainly, like I've kind of been burned by this in the past where we, you know, we thought we had a really good handle on how expenses grew relative to customers. Come to find out, you know, depending on how the customers use the platform may change the growth trajectory as well. If you've got, you know, storage fees that are accruing over a period of time, you might have expenses that are also growing non-linearly with customer growth. And so I think that's a challenge. I think separate though, like when you talk about like development expenses or, you know, proof of value, proof of concept expenses from the sales demos and things like that, those lend themselves to more of that sort of zero-based bottoms-up approach of we're going to be building these products or these features. We may need to run these types of tests. Here's relatively what we think that costs, and then sort of being able to back into sort of the similar discussion as you mentioned from the old school sort of data center side.
How are you talking to like customers or people about forecasting their cloud or at least approaching forecasting for FinOps though?
It's a collaborative effort more than anything, right? And I know that that gets thrown around a lot in the FinOps world, but it's candidly true. So like we talked about silos, like again, you can't build in a silo, frankly, because in engaging with the other teams, right? Like we talked about, there may be initiatives or structures or changes that are happening from a product perspective that may necessitate, you know, an increase in cost or potentially a decrease in cost. If we're moving from, you know, an older machine type to a newer machine type, that may be potentially, you know, 20% more efficient than the old one, right? And so again, I think that that collaborative effort is one thing to have the discussions on the front end. Obviously from a finance perspective, then kind of going back, running the numbers, and then that circular feedback loop of coming back and saying, okay, these were the underlying assumptions that we made. This is what we're looking at, you know, from a forecast relative to, you know, our trends and our customer growth and sort of some key metrics. And then, you know, really then tying that sort of feedback loop back into the broader team and getting the buy-in. That way, then you can then also hold them accountable on the back end to the actuals relative to the forecast if things tend to go one way or the other.
Well, talking about holding them accountable, one of the biggest thing, not only that you've been trying to do from cloud, but even in a traditional data center, is a showback chargeback model, right? Yeah. So you forecasted XYZ to do it. You've spent over XYZ. Here's what it looks like. Now you're in a negative perspective of your forecast. And to me, that's like those hidden costs, right? Extra storage, data transfer, egress fees that are happening, utilizing services and not taking advantage of rate optimization, which we're going to talk to next about it. How is chargeback showback actually crucial for accurate forecasting?
Yeah, I think to your point, right, it really comes down to number one for me, like, you know, what's the business goal and outcome of how you're structuring your sort of cost framework, like, right? Are you looking at it on a product basis, on a team by team basis, or so forth? And so I think that especially in a world where, you know, you have more distributed architectures and sort of multi-tenant environments, that idea of the allocations and showback chargebacks and basically putting the costs in the right respective buckets, you know, obviously just allows the business to get a more full picture of their relative expense. And again, you know, from just in a pure accountability standpoint.
Well, Tyler, let me switch gears a little bit and let's talk about rate optimization. But our third one is actually discounts. And I don't want to kind of put them too much separate. Talk to me about the difference between rate optimization and utilizing discount instruments.
Yeah, I think, you know, in general, rate optimization to me is sort of just the overarching concept of reducing the per unit cost of a particular resource or service. Whereas like on the usage side, it's more geared towards reducing the overall footprint of your workloads. And so, you know, what does that look like? I think to your point, like, it's hard to, you know, say discounting and rate optimization are two different things. I think they're sort of one in the same. And right, there's lots of ways to go about it, right? Whether it's long-term commitments, whether it's, you know, in terms of like reservations and savings plans, whether that's, you know, enterprise discount plans, working directly with the CSPs on longer term contracts, potentially purchasing through a reseller where that may, you know, they might have more of a economies of scale from a purchasing perspective and pass on some of those savings to you, the, you know, the eventual user of the tools. And so, yeah, I don't know that it's hard to bifurcate those, but that's sort of my initial sort of view on it.
Well, who's responsible for utilizing the rate optimization or discount instruments? Is it finance? Is it engineering's responsibility, or is it everybody's?
Yeah, I think it's again, this is probably a recurring theme within FinOps, but I think it's a collaborative effort. I personally think it's a finance effort, right? Because it encompasses finance, procurement, vendor management. Obviously, engineering plays a key crucial role in that because, like, again, from a pure commitment reservation standpoint, right, if we're using a particular machine type, we need to know with some relative certainty that we're going to continue using that machine into the future in order for us to, you know, potentially put a long-term commitment on that to lower the sort of the unit cost of that particular resource. So I also think that too, like, it's super key in organizations to ensure that there's sort of like the, you know, not use a great analogy, but the, you know, having multiple keys to the nukes is right. Like, it's just like, you don't want to have one person in a silo making decisions around commitments because, you know, they may be doing it without the fullest of the information and multiple people signing off, because at the end of the day, it's a financial commitment. And a lot of these can be really large. And they can be super valuable, but done poorly can be a detriment to the organization.
Tyler, we're talking about, you know, finance's role within FinOps and rate optimization and discount instruments. And here's what one of the challenges is, that the engineering knows what's being built according to the business. And they're building it. They know that the length and duration that these instances, and we're just going to use instances or VMs, however you want to determine them, because the business says this application is going to live for the next 2 years. Engineering deploys it on there. And then a new instance comes out and they got to change over the instance to get the most value for it, because it obviously goes cheaper over time. Finance says, hey, listen, we need to do some more rate optimization and we need to use our discounts from reserve instances, savings plans. Engineering is really the one who knows about these instance types, how long they're going to live, and the changes that are going to be made.
Yep.
There's where the collaboration comes together, where the two teams need to work together. But finance, in my perspective, needs to understand when engineering might purchase these, and should engineering really purchase these from a finance perspective?
I would agree. Like, the timing of when those purchases happen is certainly key, right? Like, you never want to be surprised with new products coming out, because ideally you are making the commitments in line with the purchases, so that you have no sort of days on demand in terms of pricing, which I assume your listeners know, but that's paying list price. On demand is list price. Then as you commit, you know, make commitments against those, you lower the effective discount off of the list price. And I think it all comes down to timing effectively. But again, that's where the collaborative effort and sort of the especially like having a centralized FinOps team and maybe more we'll call it mature organizations, that might be beneficial to sort of have that person sort of being liaison between the two.
Tyler, talking a little bit more about the rate optimization, in previous years, the FinOps Foundation suggested that you did usage optimization before rate. And recently they've updated that and said that you could do rate while you do usage, or a subset of that. Do you feel the same way, that rate and usage can be done in parallel? Because I have my own opinions. Actually, I'm going to share you my own opinions after your answer.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I absolutely think they do and should be done in parallel. I think it obviously changes the dynamic of how aggressive you can be on sort of rate optimization or commitments that you make. I personally think that in general, companies are too conservative when it comes to commitments. I think they have a misunderstanding of risk. And so, like, I tend to be maybe a little bit more aggressive or take a more objective approach to making commitments. And so I'm always going to say, yes, you should at any point in time try to, where applicable, lower the cost of the service itself.
I agree with you, and I think utilizing like a platform or a tool to help you do your rate optimization in an automated fashion is very key and the best way for you to get complete visibility and more bang for your buck. Now, Tyler, I'm going to share with you my thought on it, and here's how my analogy between rate and usage optimization. You have your usage optimization. So imagine this is a lever, and these are your right sizing. We'll just put it there, or EC2, and it's literally an up and down type lever as you're trying to get on. While usage, you're pulling a much harder lever, but you're going in parallel and you're able to achieve a parallel outcome with cost. You're able to save on your cost, you're able to reduce from usage, and you're not quickly doing a rate optimization and locking in. And I think that's one of the biggest concerns is that when you say a reserve instance, people are afraid of vendor lock-in.
No, and I mean, I've experienced it where you, like I said, and I think a lot of this comes from operating in silos. So, like, a lot of my experience has been from doing the wrong things. And so, yeah, if you go make a long-term commitment on something without understanding where the business is moving and sort of where the puck's going, you could certainly get yourself in a position where, you're sort of underwater relative to. But I think to your point, like, the speed at which you can sort of realize the benefits along with sort of that sort of long tail of sort of the usage optimization, I think doing those in conjunction with each other is probably the best approach.
Before I do wrap it up, where can people go to find more information about you?
Yeah, so my company is OpCypher, so we just do sort of fractional leadership in the CFO and FinOps space for software businesses. And so right now we're still building out our website, but it's opcypher.com. And if you can't find me there, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn these days. And so you can find me at Tyler Cypher, at Tyler Cyphers, I think is the LinkedIn name. I forget exactly.
Well, Tyler, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, John, man. It was good to be here.
All right, everybody, this has been the FinOps Nexus podcast. As always, don't forget to hit that like, subscribe, and notify because guess what? We're out of here.